Hi, everyone, and welcome to America Trends. Thank you for being with us here on the U2 America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. I'm Amy Fuller. To the Jussie Smollett case, another crazy twist as Chicago police today released redacted portions of their investigative report. But then, follow this, a court order barred them from releasing any more. This is all part of the fallout, as they say, about the Illinois State's Attorney General, Kim Fox, dropping all the charges against the Empire actor, Smollett, yesterday, whom police arrested for allegedly faking hate crimes against himself. Took a lot of man hours, a lot of money. Smollett, in late January, you might remember, claimed he was attacked by two white guys in MAGA hats who said things about make America great again or something. Police say he did stage the attack, hired two brothers because he was unhappy with his salary. Also to report, the Chicago Police Union, they're still mad. They're calling for an investigation into the entire Smollett case. And Charlie Kirk weighing in. I don't know if we already showed it, but the Chicago Tribune said it best. If we could just show that, perhaps. In some cities, people might be shocked if the mayor called out the prosecutor for running a crooked system that allowed a Hollywood star like the smarmy Jussie Smollett to walk away from charges. He created a fake hate crime. But this is Chicago. Is there anything really that surprises Chicago anymore? So all that going on. And not only that, apparently the record of Jussie Smollett is being totally expunged. Here's Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Our officers did hard work day in and day out, countless hours, working to unwind what actually happened that night. The city saw its reputation dragged through the mud, but I remind everybody it was not just the officer's work. That work, a piece of that work, was shown to a grand jury, and they made a decision based on only a sliver of the evidence. And as I remember correctly, somebody wanted to have that evidence in the day, and as the superintendent said, their day in court, so all the evidence could be made public. Because of the judge's decision, none of that evidence will ever be made public. None of it. This is without a doubt a whitewash of justice and sends a clear message that if you're in a position of influence and power, you'll get treated one way. Other people will be treated another way. There is no accountability then in the system. It is wrong. Full stop.
Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And again, the Chicago Police Union is calling for an investigation into the Jussie Smollett case. We're going to talk ahead to the American Truth Project's Barry Nussbaum. Barry has been talking to sources in Israel today. Sources tell them that they feel they are very close to war. This is new violence in the Gaza Strip happens, a second night of it, as Israeli forces deliver some airstrikes on Hamas targets. It all started when a rocket was fired into central Israel, hitting a civilian home. And as you see here, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was at the White House when it happened Monday, cut his visit short. He was here as President Trump signed a proclamation stating that Israel has a sovereign right over the Golan Heights. In other news today, 28 European Union countries are rejecting the recognition Trump gave to Golan Heights, and they say the EU will not follow such a policy. Here are some of the remarks from the White House regarding the Golan Heights now.
Israel is an inspiration, a trusted ally, and a cherished friend. The United States will always stand by its side. I'd like to now invite Prime Minister Netanyahu to say a few words. And Bibi and I have known each other for a long time. He's another one who truly, truly loves Israel. I think I can say he also loves the United States. So before I sign the presidential proclamation recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights, I'd like to ask Prime Minister Netanyahu to say a few words. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. President, our dear friend Donald, you have shown consistently incredible support for Israel.
Address, we will not avert our eyes from the dictatorship that chants death to America, death to Israel and calls for genocide against the Jewish people. We won't let them even consider that. We will confront the poison of anti-Semitism through both our words and, maybe even more importantly, our actions. In the last century, humanity witnessed the horrific consequences of anti-Semitism and a world without a Jewish homeland. In the wake of those unthinkable horrors, the Jewish people built a mighty nation in the Holy Land, something very, very powerful, something very special and important. Today, Israel demonstrates that incredible possibilities when strong, sovereign, and independent nations chart their own destinies. There can be no better example of greatness than what Israel has done, starting from such a small speck of sand.
Indeed it did, just as the Bible prophesied. That is President Trump making remarks from the White House this past Monday, side by side with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu actually had to cut his visit short because of some violence. A rocket fired into central Israel, hitting a civilian home, and so he went home to sort of deal with that. So what we're dealing with today is finding out there's been a second night of violence after Hamas, or Israeli forces, delivered airstrikes on Hamas targets. And but President Trump signing this proclamation saying Israel has a sovereign right to the Golan Heights. So there are all these issues all the time with Israel and who gets what, as we know. We are so pleased to have Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project with us to talk about some of the events happening this week. And I know from what he's told me, he has been on the phone with some of his sources in Israel today, and they are very fearful that war is close. And they told him a few other things. Barry, welcome back to America Trends.
Thanks, Annie. So good to be with you, especially in this very important time as news is literally breaking while we are on the air.
Yeah. What did you find out, Barry?
There's a tremendous amount of armored corps personnel, I should say, at the border of Gaza right now, amassed at the southern tip of Israel, both armored personnel carriers and tank corps, preparing to cross the border if necessary. Prime Minister Netanyahu, who also holds the defense portfolio as defense minister, has finally reached the end of his rope. Quite frankly, I'm amazed that he had this much patience. Israel has crossed the border from the air in the last 48 hours, using mostly helicopters and some jets as well to bomb infrastructure on the Gaza side. But to my great consternation, Israel is the only country in the history of the world that calls up the building they are about to bomb and says, "You have 5 minutes, get everybody out. We don't want anybody hurt." And then they proceed.
Can you just say that again? It really is unheard of.
It's in the history of warfare, both modern and ancient, Amy, there's never been a civilization at war who calls up the enemy and says, "Quick, evacuate. We're going to blow up your headquarters, or we're going to blow up your communication center, or we're going to blow up the office of the head of the intelligence service in Gaza." And so what happens is these people get the phone call on their cell phones. They run away. They usually hide in the hospital or in the nearby schools. The building gets blown up, and it doesn't deter anything. Can you imagine in World War II, if any country participating called the other side and said, "Run away. We're going to blow up your headquarters. We're going to blow up your factories, but we don't want anybody hurt." I don't think it would have dissuaded more violence. And what Israel is finding after months and months of kite bombs crossing the border, of fire bombs, of mortar shells, of long range and medium range rockets flying out of Gaza, and the latest one flew, get this, north of Tel Aviv, hit a house with seven people in it, all of whom were injured, and thank God nobody was killed. It's a tremendous escalation, and what Israel does in response is gets on the phone, says, "Get out of the buildings, we're going to retaliate," and then they blow up empty buildings. Literally, that's how Israel responds. And to no one's great surprise, it doesn't defer more violence.
Talking to Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project. That's theamericantruthproject.org. And Barry, So we've had two nights of violence, and the people you're talking to there, this could go on for days and days, perhaps weeks. Is that what you're hearing on the ground?
Well, there's the additional impetus by the present government of Israel to be more strong and forceful in their response because it's election season. And southern Israel is infuriated with their own government for being nice. In other words, to tell the residents of southern Israel, we'll just live in a bomb shelter and hope you don't get killed from the next missile, instead of going out and wiping out the people that are sending the missiles over the fences. I was just there last year, and the proximity from Gaza to the surrounding communities in Israel is, well, like a three wood. It's really close. And what happens is, if you've got 3 to 4 seconds to get in a bomb shelter before your house blows up, chances are, if it's a direct hit, you're not going to make it. The Israelis in the south of Israel are fed up. They're urging their government to do something about it, and something about it doesn't include blowing up empty buildings. That's why, for the first time in many years, there is a mass of armor at the fence right now, and we know some people in some of those units that are waiting to get the order to cross the border or not. Stand by. It could come at any moment, or it might be called off entirely. We just don't know.
Yeah, because if I recall, over the weekend, wasn't there a ceasefire going on?
Well, what happens is Hamas always starts it with missiles. They blow up a house, kill some people, start fields on fire, infiltrate through tunnels. Israel strikes back, and then Hamas does what they always do. After a few buildings are blown up, they contact the Egyptians, who say, ceasefire, ceasefire, ceasefire. Israel stopped attacking. Within hours, another 50 or 60 missiles were launched, and so Israel bombed more buildings. As of right now, as we speak tonight, it's quiet. Whether it will be tomorrow, I don't know. There's a lot of troops at the border right now, Amy. The next missile, I think, is going to cause an invasion.
So after that ceasefire, I guess it was the rocket that was fired into central Israel Monday that put an end to the ceasefire, Barry, if that's correct. I think we'll hold you over for another segment, talk more about why Israel matters so much in the relationship between the U.S. It's just a tiny sliver of land, yet there has been oh so much war and strife over it for all of time. And we're going to talk about that with Barry Nussbaum when we come right back here on America Trends. Show you when you're mine, oh, mine. Doing some of my brain, and maybe you know it's obvious. I'm a sucker for you. Palestinian border authorities say Egyptian mediators have arrived on the scene in the Gaza Strip for talks with the territory's Hamas rulers. The delegation of Egyptian officials crossed into Gaza Wednesday as an unofficial ceasefire between Israel and Hamas appeared to hold after a round of heavy cross-border firing. We've been talking about all this, including the recognition of the Golan Heights as part of Israel from President Trump this week as he stood side by side Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel. And Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project is keeping tabs on all this. He has sources on the ground, a daughter in college there, and he just happens to know what's going on. Barry, welcome back.
Thanks, Amy. Good to continue the conversation with you.
We have a lot of video because you're over there often, a video that you shot of the territory. Talk about, you know, the Golan Heights. Why did it matter that President Trump took this step? I know it's very critical in the defense of Israel. And so why did the Golan Heights matter? And we're going to show some video and you can tell us about it when it pops up.
Well, it's quite simple, actually. Syria is, for all intents and purposes, no longer an operational country. It's a territory surrounded by enemies of the people within each enclave. You've got the Syrians, you've got the Iranians, you've got the Russians, and you've got the biggest terror group in the whole area called Hezbollah. The video that you're showing right now is what I shot on the Gaza border. You can see that's Gaza right across a tomato field where we...
Did we lose a little bit of Barry? I think we're going to get him right back. Hey, Barry, you're back. Welcome back.
Okay. So the video you're showing now, Amy, was... filmed by me at the Gaza border. That field is now filled with tanks and armored personnel carriers ready to cross that border if necessary. Up in the Golan, you've got not one enemy, but five enemies or so of both the United States and Israel. What used to happen in the Golan before 1967 is Syrian troops would sit up there and rain fire down on the farmers in Israel. All over northern Israel and the Sea of Galilee were just literally a mortar away from a rocket-propelled grenade, a long-range rifle, machine gun fire, Katyusha rockets, and so on. And they'd sit up there and take pot shots and kill people on a regular basis. When they had the war against Israel with the intention of wiping out Israel in 1967, Israel recaptured the Golan from basically returning it to Jewish hands as it had been for thousands of years before. Israel will never give it back because it would be suicidal for the defense of northern Israel. And it's in the best interest of the United States, as President Trump just stated, because all the enemies of the United States are just on the other side of that border. I filmed at Syria on the border last year. You could see UN troops with their UN insignia right next to Hezbollah troops, and the UN does and did nothing about it, and they never do. Why? Because Hezbollah would kill them if they did anything about it. If Israel ever gave it back, it would be impossible to defend northern Israel, which is why Israel annexed it in 1981, and President Trump, and I think he was right, blessed the annexation this week at the White House. It's good for us. It's good for Israel. It's bad for Hezbollah, bad for Russia, bad for Iran, and bad for the brutal dictator Assad. Everybody on the northern side of that border is a brutal, murderous thug, and none of them should or could ever be trusted by either the United States or by Israel. If you go and look at it, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
And I know you've talked to some people in Israel today. And the latest, these Egyptian mediators have arrived on the scene. What should we expect from that? Anything?
Well, Egypt wants it calm because it's better for Egypt. And Egypt wants it calm because it's better for the United States and for Israel. I can tell you from talking first to my daughter, she's got three friends that are in uniform that are at the Gaza border with their units right now, waiting to find out if they're going to cross or go back to base. Literally waiting for a signal for either the war to start or for the troops to back down. I assure you, if any more missiles fly across the border from Gaza into populated Israel, it's going to be a very aggressive response, and it should be. No country in the world puts up with what Israel does, and for the life of me, I can't understand the call first, empty the building, then blow it up response of the IDF. I think they have to step up the response, and if they do, the missiles will stop crossing the border again.
IDF, Israeli Defense Force, always on guard. It's a completely different way of living in Israel, isn't it, Barry? And I know that you're more than just invested there because you're an American of Jewish faith, right? Jewish faith?
Exactly.
And also, your daughter goes to school there, so all of your eyes are always posted on Israel, indeed.
Absolutely. When it's a family member who tells you, "Don't worry, Pop, the bomb shelter in my apartment building was opened up tonight, and we did a drill so we can get downstairs in under a minute if a missile is on its way." It's because she goes to school in Tel Aviv, and the missile that blew up the house hit a suburb of Tel Aviv. So there's millions of people literally practicing to go to bomb shelters. What you're showing on the video now is what I shot in Sderot. That's the town behind the field that I shot last year. Every single building there has shrapnel holes in it. And that bus stop I'm talking in front of is a mobile bomb shelter. So if you're standing outside, you run inside of 3 feet of concrete and steel. So if there is a direct hit, you probably will live. Unfortunately, Sderot's across the street from Gaza. So they have between 3 and 7 seconds to get to safety. And that means every kindergartner is under the same timeline as every adult. You don't make it, you die. It's just that simple.
It is an entire, as I said, a different way of living because you're always on guard. Everything's always fortified. Border wall security there is no joke. You got a call there, Barry? And so, well, you might, it might be breaking news from Israel. I don't think we can emphasize enough that they are always on guard. Just from being there on the ground and having your daughter there, and people, I don't know if people realize that, doesn't everyone in Israel, they all join the military and sign up, don't they?
Yeah, everybody that is a citizen will go in and do their service. My daughter will do her service in the next year. Another one of my sons will start his service next year. So it's something that is unlike what we have in this country. There is so much responsibility and maturity among the young people in Israel because they know that their country will only survive if each one of them goes and serves and protects their country. And these young ladies and young men grow up very fast because they all go in at 18. It's a big difference from the United States, where for some reason we look down on our military, at least those on the left, when the rest of us proudly are grateful for their service, as well we should be. We are free because they put their lives on the line for us. And in Israel, everybody puts their life on the line for the rest of the country. So it's a lot different than here. We could learn something from the Israelis, I think, in terms of how they respect the men and women in uniform.
I sure wish we would, and there they are. So Barry, I've got 20 seconds, but did you say your son and daughter, I know your daughter going to college there, have they resettled there, in fact, making Aliyah, returning to the homeland, as they say?
Yeah, my daughter has, and my son will be going late this year to do the same thing. They'll be dual citizens of the United States and Israel.
How about that? Well, the prophecies of the Bible coming true as the Jews to go back and resettle that land. Barry, we're out of time, but will you keep us posted on everything?
Absolutely. I'll be in touch.
We'll find you at AmericanTruthProject.org. And thank you so much, and God bless to your son and daughter and everyone over there.
I'll be riding shotgun. First of all, I want to thank my family, my friends, the incredible people of Chicago and all over the country and the world who have prayed for me, who have supported me, who have shown me so much love. No one will ever know how much that has meant to me, and I will forever be grateful. I want you to know that not for a moment was it in vain. I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I have been accused of. This has been an incredibly difficult time, honestly one of the worst of my entire life. But I'm a man of faith, and I'm a man that has knowledge of my history, and I would not bring my family, our lives, or the movement through a fire like this. I just wouldn't.
You can joke and say the Oscar, the Tony Award goes to no one other than Jussie Smollett. But to be clear, there is a lot of political theater going on in Chicago this week. A lot of twists and turns after the state's attorney there in Illinois dropped all 16 charges against the Empire actor after he said that he was attacked and some hate crimes against him. And now the big twist, Chicago police today, just out of nowhere, they released some redacted portions of their investigative report. They're mad as heck, and so is Mayor Rahm Emanuel, that the state's attorney did this. They said, you know, we had our ducks in a row, we had our facts straight, the grand jury wanted this guy indicted, 16 charges, and now what have you done? And again, Kim Fox, just to go over some more of these facts, the state attorney general in Illinois, she recused herself a month ago. Then all of a sudden yesterday, she comes back and drops the charges. So police are ticked off. They released that redacted info, and in just no time after that, a court order came out barring them from releasing any more. So what we have here, ladies and gentlemen, is a huge, we'll call it, spinning match between the cops and the courts in Chicago. Stay tuned. It's going to get interesting. Our friend Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health, that's mainstreammentalhealth.org, is here to talk a little bit about this case, including, I know, Dr. Huber, it's so good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good to see you, Amy. Yes.
One of the topics today for you is, can America trust Jussie Smollett and forgive him? And before he came out and spoke yesterday, which we just saw a bit of, the cops said, you know, it could go a long way if he apologized. He is doubling down and saying, I'm innocent. I didn't do anything wrong. Everything I said happened. So there's all that. And there's all that we've talked about before, like what he said he was going to go into some sort of rehab. And we were talking about, was he on drugs? And he said he might be on drugs. And we were like sort of identifying any character, like borderline personality disorder he might have. But again, he's doubling down and he's got the backing of the courts there for now.
Well, you know, theoretically has the backing of the courts. What he has with the backing of the courts is a local constabulary that says, okay, you can't release any more of these records. What I have faith in our judicial system, and the grand jury process is very significant. I mean, it is there to avoid, you know, wasting time in the courtroom with cases that are not winnable. And they looked at this and they actually came back with not just one charge, they came back with 16 different indictments they said to charge him with. So there is, in my belief system, my experience working in the court system, you know, I was in court all day yesterday, is that there was grounds to move forward with him. Now, this is all the state level. There's nobody's asking if the federal courts are going to move forward on this. There may be an option for that. I'm not an attorney. I can't tell you if that's even an option, but I know the FBI was involved in the investigation, so that tells me there was federal involvement at that point. So the fact that there were too many suspicious things on the surface that led the police to say, you know, this isn't an open and shut case. We don't trust him. His story doesn't make sense. And you know, it's basically, if you were a criminal, would you send a letter to the bank and say, I'm going to rob you tomorrow? No. Well, why would they send the person they're going to attack a note saying they're going to attack somebody of color who meets his criteria? I think it's bogus. And I think it took some bravery and guts on the police to release some of that information. But at that time, nobody had said you couldn't. So yeah, they were within their rights. I like to think that the grand jury information is basically confidential and privileged. And the judge then of the case that gets tried gets to set what the rules are for evidence. It's a really interesting case. His ideas that he can stand there and make those faces is basically a homage to the ability this man has as an actor to say that his mother's child would not be able to do these kinds of things. And I can tell you, as a forensic psychologist, some of the nicest people in the world have done some of the most heinous things you can imagine. So everybody's possible.
Let's get back to that in a minute, because I want to pinpoint what you say about the grand jury is more than profound, because police say the 16 charges on which they indicted him, Smollett, that they had just a sliver of the evidence in the case to do that. They say there was oh so much more. So I think the cops and the mayor are so very, very, probably angrier than we know. I bet there is fist pounding, a lot of cursing, because not only did they drop these charges, they're expunging his whole record. That's gonna be, and I just wanna brag about you for a minute. You run mainstreammentalhealth.org, chairman for it, a nonprofit that helps change lives, but you've been a mental health professional for over 20 years, and you're a clinical forensic psychologist with privileges at two long-term acute care hospitals. But part of your job is going and testifying in cases like these. So you know the ins and outs of all this.
Well, I rely on lots of good attorneys. Okay. And I go in and answer the questions they ask me to answer. And, you know, it's not a fun thing. I mean, you know, being on the witness stand, even when you win, is miserable, because they pick at every single thing. You know, if you use the wrong tense, all of a sudden you're on the indictment list. I had one attorney sit there and question me for 3 hours about the university I graduated from and said that I'm saying that my university was better than his university. I'm like, no, I testified to my assessment that said this person has done these things. And the judge actually started laughing at the attorney after a while, because the attorney started begging the question. So your university is better than mine? And it's like, that's not the question.
Lawyers. 3 hours, John? Oh,
yes,
my God.
Yes.
Oh, fun for you. But we'll go back and talk a little bit about the personality, because besides the hate crime, you talk about these federal charges, which could still be coming, because he allegedly sent a fake letter to himself with, I don't know if it had anything in it,
Went through the U.S. mail, that, in my understanding.
Because it went through the mail, there could be federal charges coming down the pike. I don't know if it was threatening him or if there were any agents or substances in it. But this fake letter, and that has nothing to do with the state. The feds will be involved, as you say, so we'll just see what happens. But there's this huge cost to the city. This whole thing that, you know, people were really big to jump on it in late January, where he said he was out in the early morning hours during the polar vortex.
Yeah, 30-degree blows weather, and he decided he was hungry and was going to walk to a hamburger stand at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning instead of driving his car, getting an Uber, getting a taxi, anything like that. He decides to walk. That
and,
just does not make sense.
And a couple of bad dudes just happened to be out during that horrible weather, too, waiting to get him.
Waiting. Yeah, supposedly waiting for the unassuming African-American to walk through and be attacked.
He described them as two white men wearing MAGA hats who said something like, "This is MAGA country," which Chicago hardly is, but okay, say it did happen. Right. And all police could find were these two Nigerian brothers. You could clearly, they say, tell if the way he described it, that they weren't white guys from what he could tell beyond their masks. And then they have all this other evidence. But John, we're going to keep you after the break, okay, and go over more of it. And see, you know, he is doubling down here. Could that mean something? You don't want to jump the gun. A lot of people jumped the gun and said, oh, those MAGA people are bad. Everyone who loves Trump, they're just hateful. So we're going to come right back with you and talk about, you know, how we do love to jump to conclusions, us and human nature and the media, and more about Jussie Smollett himself. Stay tuned. All charges dropped against Jussie Smollett after he, well, police say he staged some fake hate crimes against himself. What would make someone do that? Do we just need attention? Is it human nature? We're here with Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health. That's mainstreammentalhealth.org. Glad you're with us here on the U2 America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. So there really is a lot to go into this whole little soup of this mess of whatever it is, Doc, because we can talk about why would someone do something like this? Police said he wanted a greater salary. But there's also things to get into. And, you know, Doc, we can joke about the political theater of it all and the silliness, but this has huge ramifications on regarding hate crimes and the whole MAGA universe versus everybody else who thinks everybody wearing a MAGA hat is racist. When he first reported this, Jussie Smollett, in late January, everyone jumped the media, Twitter. They all said, oh, everyone who supports Trump is awful. Absolutely. Look what they did to poor Jussie.
Yes. And my thought is, you know, Rahm Emanuel is not really concerned with MAGA. I think what they're concerned with is, right, you know, they were on the verge of citywide riots, mm-hmm, and the loss of life, the loss of property, the loss of business, the cost to the city in general. And then they just drop all the charges with this. And I don't blame him for that. But, you know, if you think about this, we've had between 12 and 14 cases very similar to this where unknown people had made false accusations against conservatives or MAGA people, Trump supporters, and they all got busted. Hey, this was a setup. And they all just kind of got slapped on the wrist and got told they were going to be watched from now on and got sent home with no charges. So if we look at it from that perspective, he was given the standard of, you know, the community standard, what we've done to other people over the last 2 years for this. And we've kind of gone and said, okay, it doesn't matter if he's rich and famous, he gets the exact same rules everybody else does. And that I kind of, you know, on a rational point, I can understand and handle. The downside is I wouldn't want to be the next person who does it. And the other side to it is, you know, we just got through with this whole college scandal where all these wealthy, famous musicians and actors and actresses paid for their kids to get in to, you know, Ivy League schools when they were subpar in their abilities and weren't making the grade as far as SAT and ACT scores were. So this is kind of refreshing on one point, but I think it's also a slap in the face to the city leaders, to the police department, that we're really investigating, and they're there to protect the city and the individuals in that city. And Jussie just kind of spit in their eye and said, look, I can get away from this, and I'm going to keep saying that I'm innocent, because the people have a very short-term memory, about 3 or 4 months once this stops being played on the air, and his value is going to quadruple, because people won't necessarily remember why they remember him, but they're going to remember him. And a human brain works in such a way that we want to try and believe we have a positive life and a positive outlook. So we're going to think the only people we focus on are good people. So the only reason why I remember Jesse is, oh, he must be a good person. He's a good actor. And, you know, but the reality of it is we knew Empire, but we had no idea who Jesse was. Mm-hmm. Now we do. Now he's a household name, and he's probably quadrupled his value as far as a box office draw. And now he's probably looking at, over maybe the next 18 months or so, looking at some major motion picture deals and then coming back and being in regular television, making some really, really nice cash. And in that sense, his marketing plan has been a success, but we don't know yet. Story's not out. It hasn't finished. We still got to see what the federal courts are going to do. And hopefully they'll do the right thing according to Rahm Emanuel, which, you know, it's been a long time since I've agreed with him on most things.
Well,
and this one I do agree with him on.
He was a big part of the Clinton administration. Then he went back to Chicago to become mayor there. So it is interesting to see all that in actually agreeing with him for once. But the fact is, the cops there, so much manpower. I think, were there 24 detectives assigned? I don't know how much money. And this
yes,
is at a time when the polar vortex was going on. They had their resources needed elsewhere.
Absolutely. And I believe the FBI had close to 20 or 30 other officers working on it, too.
Hmm. And what you say, though, about, I think they used to call, they have all these terms, but and this goes back to our human nature. Back when I did TV news, they described what's a Q rating. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if the audience loves you or hate you, but if they have a strong reaction, they'll know who you are. And I
yes.
think that's what you're describing Jesse will have. And, you know, maybe shame on us if he really is lying.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, based on my trust in the grand jury, I have to say he is. I don't know for sure. I haven't seen the evidence. But my experience with a grand jury, they are fallible. They do make mistakes, but they make a lot less of them when we look at what the regular courts would have to go through to weed through good cases and bad cases if a regular judge had to do that every day.
Hmm. Why do we, is it because of Twitter and social media that we're so eager to jump on when they first heard that this allegedly happened to poor Jesse, and everyone got on there and just, they were just, again, dissing conservatives and all you Trump people are alike. Why can't we wait to hear what's really going on? Because, I mean, some of this stuff was just coming out, and immediately people in Chicago, the media there and the police were saying, this some of this is smelling a little like,
right.
This is just not quite right.
Exactly. Well, think about groupthink. You know, when you get
yeah,
a group of people
sure.
together, they start making kind of bad decisions. Individuals in that group can make really great decisions. But you get the group together, and all of a sudden, there's this kind of self-supporting network that everybody has the same belief sets, and they start trying to one-up the other person. That's how they get their hierarchy of who's the boss and who's the subordinate in that same group. So all of a sudden they start, you know, being a little more extreme, a little more extreme, a little more extreme. Now, let's step back to social media, and we go through and we weed out people who don't have the same thoughts we do, or we don't respond to people who don't have the same thoughts we do. So all of a sudden they look at their Facebook, their Instagram, their Snapchat, all this stuff, and they're surrounded by now a pseudo group. It's not really a group, but they got their headphones on. They're looking at their cell phone walking down the street, and they look around and there's 300 people crossing the street with them in New York City. And they think every one of those people feels and thinks exactly like they do. So now you have that group think, even though you don't have the group. And that's where we start making really dangerous decisions. And we start jumping and making these claims that, oh, you know, he's got to be protected and all this kind of stuff, instead of actually waiting for the meat of the investigation to help you make a rational decision, which is disturbing on a lot of levels. But if
I
step back and learn how to make rational decisions and don't just react to headlines.
A great idea. And those, the headlines, the media is as culpable as anybody. We have to do much, much better. And that's a story for another time. But for now, Dr. John Huber of MainstreamMentalHealth.org, thank you so much for being with us. And we'll see you next time, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a great day. Thank you.
You are with America Trends. And whether you're watching on the U2 America TV network or on BizTalk Radio, we thank you so much for being here and invite you to see us online. U2America.com is the website for the TV side, and you can click right through and find all our social media handles, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, of course. Oh, look at that little mosaic there. Interesting. So we will see you there. We will see you online. And we also want to thank our guest for this hour. We had Barry Nussbaum from the American Truth Project giving us the very latest from the ground in Israel after a second night of bombings. And people say there could be more to come and war could be imminent. Egyptian negotiators have landed on the ground today to talk to Hamas. So we'll see what happens. Also had Dr. John Huber from Mainstream Mental Health talking about the Jussie Smollett case and how and why we react to things the way we do on Twitter, why the media does it, and why someone would say some things in the first place that might not be truthful if Smollett is, in fact, not being truthful. Who knows? Finally tonight, she is a favorite because of her breakout role on the breakout show, This Is Us, Chrissy Metz. And now she's headed to the big screen. This, too, looks like it could be a tearjerker and one that calls upon faith, a movie that reminds us nothing is impossible with God. It is out April 17th, and now here's your first look at the movie. It is called Us.
Rise and shine. Breakfast is ready in 10 minutes. And don't make me come back up there. This is our town. It's a close-knit community, the kind of place where everyone knows everyone.
Hi, Miss Jay.
Hey, how are you girls?
And we're always there for each other.
Nice sermon, Pastor.
What do you guys have on for the rest of the day?
Well, John has a basketball game.
Yeah, I've seen this guy hoop it up around here. This kid is so lit.
Text your mom tomorrow and tell her when and where to pick you up.
And don't do anything stupid.
Love you guys.
Boys, get off the ice!
We're training for the Olympics, sir!
Cindy!
John!
He's been underwater for more than 15 minutes. It's gonna be a recovery, not a rescue.
I got something.
We got him!
We've done everything medically possible. There's nothing more we can do.
No. Please, God, send your Holy Spirit to save my son.
A 14-year-old St. Charles boy who spent 15 minutes trapped underwater is continuing to fight for his life.
I don't believe John will survive the night.
You don't know my son. He is a fighter. So I need you to be the best for John, and you just let God do the rest. You are my pride and joy. I can't wait to see you shoot those baskets and run up and down the court again.
The Smith family asked for one thing. Please pray for John.
In the water that day, I was ready to give up, but then I hear this voice telling me, go back. Either I'm nuts
or God's talking to you.
But I don't believe in God.
I believe, but maybe that only goes so far with something like this.
I'm your pastor. I'm supposed to walk alongside you for as long as it takes.
Did you see the Facebook page? It's gone viral.
Tommy?
I hope he's gonna be okay.
We're not gonna get through this alone. Whatever you have for me, for Brian, for John,